folks. This is Scott Weingart, and you're listening to the MCrit Podcast. Alrighty then. Continuing with the no airway for 3 months stuff, let's talk a little more on acid base. Now, if you haven't listened to the MCrit acid base lectures, and there's four of them, and they're all in the show notes, go back and listen to those, because I'm going to be talking about a lot of high-level stuff that you want the background for first. This all stemmed from a conversation slash debate with a super smart guy named Steve Smith. Now, you know Steve Smith because he is the EKG maven. He's been on the show. He has an incredible EKG blog. I'll also link to that in the show notes. And we've been having a back and forth for months now on whether bicarb is helpful on the critically ill patient with a low pH slash low serum bicarb. And we've been bandying about various anecdotal versus studies on dogs and all sorts of stuff. And I really just wanted to finally parse this out on a podcast. So that's what today is. Now, before we go there, I've been ordered to give a shout out to the residents of St. Joe's in New Jersey. I was just there for a conference. It was wonderful. And especially a shout out to the women of the senior class, because they will come and hunt me down if I don't give that shout out. So there you go. Now, let's get right to the podcast. Now, Steve believes that if you have a patient who's sick with a low pH and a low bicarb, that giving amps of sodium bicarbonate will be helpful to these patients. And he's had cases where he says their hemodynamics improve, and he states that this is something he does regularly, and his experience has been this is good. And I, on the other hand, just looking at all the evidence I could find, don't think this is necessarily a good idea. We've discussed this in that fourth acid base lecture, but I wanted to go into this further. I think because you're not going to listen to me about this stuff, because I am not an expert in all things acid base. I am an acolyte of the physicochemical approach, of the Stewart approach, but I am not the master in any sense of the word on this stuff. I figured I'd go find the master. Now, if you want to know who the master of critical care acid base is, I think it's pretty much a not disputed fact that that master is John Kellum. John Kellum is a full bird professor at the University of Pittsburgh. He has written countless articles and treatises on acid base and the critically ill. He's friggin' brilliant. And I managed to find him at the Society of Critical Care Medicine meeting and actually sit him down and talk to him about that stuff. So let's go right to that, and then we'll come back to just me and we'll talk a little bit more about this stuff. So I'm here with John Kellum, master of all things acid base. And what I wanted to talk to you about is a few difficult questions when it comes to managing a patient with acid base and abnormalities. And the first one that comes up is, who should we be giving bicarb to, if anyone?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, of course, you recognize that we're never really giving bicarb alone. We're giving sodium bicarb. And the reason that sodium bicarb works is that you're giving sodium a strong cation without a strong anion. You're giving it with a weak anion, which is CO2, which is basically CO2. We're blowing off the CO2, end up with a rise in strong ion difference, and that has an alkalinizing effect. By the way, if you can't blow off the CO2, then you don't get that effect, and it has very, very little effect at all, and in some cases, effect is hard to even measure on acid base without being able to blow off the CO2.
Now, I need to really emphasize that, because there's a lot of doubters to that. So if you're in a situation where you cannot blow off the excess CO2 you generate, you've essentially done nothing for the patient.
Yeah, in a closed system, I mean, in a test tube, if you just add sodium bicarbonate to a, and you don't degas the solution, you get a trivial rise in pH. And at physiologic concentrations of what you could reasonably give someone, you're not going to change their pH. So for all intents and purposes, for clinical purposes, the only way sodium bicarbonate affects the pH is by allowing you to give sodium without giving a counter anion.
So then, if you had a patient you actually wanted to get some degree of alkalinizing effect, do you raise your respiratory rate if the patient's on mechanical ventilation after you give bicarb?
You can. And of course, when you see this in the OR, for example, or in a patient with an end-tidal CO2 monitor, that if you give a bolus of sodium bicarbonate, the end-tidal CO2 goes up. and there's a it lasts for about 30 seconds or so. The end-tidal CO2 goes up, and in a ventilating patient, there's really very little difficulty in getting rid of that increased CO2. The other thing that has to be emphasized, though, is that you're not going to raise the strong eye difference significantly with a bolus of with an amp of sodium bicarbonate. It takes a fair amount of sodium bicarbonate to have an effect. You may see transiently a change in pH, but once that solution redistributes into total body water, which sodium does because it moves with water, the effect is not going to be sustained. So in order to have a long effect, a sustained effect on the pH, one needs to give really quite a substantial amount of sodium bicarbonate,
which is really the
sort of problem. Well, the easiest way to figure it out is to simply recognize that the only way you're really changing the acid-base status of the patient is by changing the strong eye difference. So if you change the strong eye difference, you raise the sodium and you dilute the chloride. So if you're going, it's a very easy calculation to make because the strong eye difference change is equivalent to the change in base excess. So if you're trying to repair, let's say you've got somebody with a standard base excess that's minus 20, and you say, look, I'd really like to get half of that fixed, then I have to raise the sodium and lower the chloride so that the sum of that change is at least 10 milliequivalent change. So that's a substantial amount of increased sodium and a decrease. And you can calculate that the same way when you're trying to repair a hyponatremic situation, where you're trying to raise the sodium concentration, and you're trying to go from, say, 130 to 125 to 130. In the case of an acidotic patient that you're trying to increase their pH by changing their strong eye difference, you'd say, well, I got a sodium of 140. I need to get that to 145. How much? And you do that calculation, and you recognize that, well, it's actually a lot more than I recognized. This leads to maybe another obvious question that people would want to ask, and that is, if I've got a patient who I've made acidotic, I've created a problem with hyperchloremia because I've given a lot of sodium bicarbonate, I've given a lot of sodium chloride to, can I just fix that? I just repair that by giving sodium bicarbonate? And the simple answer is yeah, you can, but recognize that the reason you got into that trouble is that you gave a lot of fluid, and in order to then give a lot more fluid to fix it, you're probably going to fluid overload the patient if you haven't already. Like in most things in medicine, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so a better response, a better solution to this problem, pun intended, is that you don't
get it in there.
You don't give that fluid, you don't give that solution. Now, that's be reasonable. I don't think we could manage critically ill patients currently with the solutions that are available on the market right now without using some saline. I think what I object to is when patients are given 10 liters of 0.9% saline. If you've got a patient who needs that much volume, then you really need to mix it up. You need to recognize that I can't give it all as saline. I've got to give some of it as lactated ringers. I've got to give some of it as sodium bicarbonate. The other newer solutions that are on the market, I think, are reasonable, but in large quantities, I don't think we really understand what effects. So, for example, plasmolite's a well-engineered solution in terms of its strong eye difference, although that's actually a little bit high, so it'll create alkalosis. But certainly given in concert with saline, that may be just exactly what you want. The problem with that solution is that I think the gluconate we know a little bit about the acetate that we give in that, but not massive quantities. So if we gave 10 liters of plasmolite, that probably wouldn't be a good thing either. So my sense is that if you reasonably balanced about the solutions that you give, some plasmolite, some saline might be reasonable. Some lactated ringers, some saline might be reasonable. There's not a good, and I think that's why people continue to give saline, is because there's not a great alternative that I could just pull off the shelf.
Absolutely. Now, you can't pull a bicarb-containing solution off the shelf. So if you wanted to mix it up, let's say you gave 2 liters of saline, are you just putting 3 amps into a...
So there are people that do that. And certainly when I give a drip of sodium bicarbonate, I'll take D5W or sterile water, and I'll add about 3 amps of sodium bicarbonate, because that gets you 150 milliequivalents of sodium, so it's about normal bicarbonate, if you will.
Now, at this point in the interview, Dr. Kellum gives some very well-founded warnings about the fact that if you are going to compound these things at the bedside, you better make damn sure you get it right, because it's always a dangerous situation when they're not pre-made solutions. All right, to recap what you just heard from Dr. Kellum, and you're going to be hearing a lot more from Dr. Kellum. I have another about 25 minutes of that interview to put on subsequent episodes. So what have we said? We've said that if you do not have the ability to blow off your carbon dioxide generated by giving the bicarb, you really have not done anything good for the patient's pH. And, you know, the corollary to that is if you decide it's a good idea to give an amp of bicarb, which probably is rarely a good idea, giving bicarb may be a good idea, but giving an amp of it as a rapid push, not a good idea, because what you do is you generate more carbon dioxide than you could effectively blow off in the minute in which you gave it, and so you're going to cause bad stuff for a while. It's much better to give amp over 5 minutes, or better yet, 10. It's even better to give it as a drip in a fluid or on an IV pump, but it certainly should never be just slammed in unless, you know, you have a patient with a sodium channel blockade, like a tricyclic overdose. Even then, I don't know if it's a great idea, but at least it's a reasonable idea. But even if you gave it over 5 minutes, you have to blow off that carbon dioxide if you're going to get any significant change in your pH at all. Which means if your patient's spontaneously breathing, it's probably fine. They'll increase their minute ventilation as long as they're already not maximally Kussmauling. If you have a patient on mechanical ventilation who's still taking spontaneous breaths, okay, you might still be good. But if you have a patient on mechanical ventilation who is apneic, you better increase your respiratory rate if you want this to work. The only way you are affecting pH if the patient's not increasing their respiratory drive to blow off the excess CO2 is by that CO2 going intracellularly. And this is exactly what we don't want. Now, I'm not going to debate intracellular acidosis being good, bad, whatever. What I will tell you is if you're giving bicarb, you're not trying to affect the serum pH. That doesn't matter because that doesn't have any effect on the body. What you need to affect is the tissue pH. Now, even if we believe that giving an amp of bicarb makes the serum pH better, and that's still debatable unless you get rid of that CO2, what we know is that in every study I've seen, you're making the intracellular pH worse, and that's really what you're trying to do, because all of the advocates for this are saying, well, you get increased heart function, you make things better. Well, it's the tissues of the heart that you need to affect, and you're making them worse by giving bicarb in many situations. Now, don't believe me. You know, you already heard Dr. Kellum say it, but I'm going to go to an article which I think is one of the best articles on this topic. It's by a gentleman named Sean Forsythe, and it was published in Chest. Now, I'm going to quote directly from this article. And here's a piece of that Forsythe article. Those who continue to advocate the use of sodium bicarbonate for lactic acidosis, and I would say any SIG acidosis in general, generally use the following chain of reasoning, either explicitly or implicitly. One, low pH in and of itself is harmful, most notably by impairing cardiovascular function. Two, sodium bicarbonate can increase the pH when infused intravenously. Three, raising the pH with sodium bicarbonate improves cardiovascular function or some other relevant outcome. And then four, any adverse effects of sodium bicarbonate are outweighed by its benefits. And he goes on in this article, and it's going to be in the show notes, and it'll be available in the CME site. He goes on to debunk each of these four, that you're probably not raising pH. If you are raising pH, that's not doing anything good hemodynamically and may actually adversely affect the patient hemodynamically, and that the deleterious effects are not outweighed by the benefits. He goes on to discuss all of them. Check out this article. It really goes through all the things Steve and I are debating. Now, listed in that article is the fact that every study that's looked at this shows the intracellular pH is actually getting worse, not better. And again, that's what we want to affect is the brain pH, the heart function pH. That's what we want. That you probably are not doing good things hemodynamically. In fact, when you look at the head-to-head trials versus normal saline and bicarb, there's no difference. That no matter what the pH is, if you give bicarb, you don't make the hemodynamics better. That was the big argument of folks, is that At a certain pH, the heart stops functioning, catecholamines stop functioning, and therefore you should give pH, make the, you should give bicarb rather, make the pH better, and that's going to improve hemodynamic function. That has not been borne out by the evidence in any significant way in any study I've seen. I'm happy to look at any you folks want to send in if you have a difference of opinion on this. And further, that if you are seeing hemodynamic effects, and anecdotally you might see some, and Steve Smith has sent me cases, he's seen significant hemodynamic effects. The hemodynamic effects you're probably seeing are based on the fact that you're giving a hypertonic sodium solution. And we know, at least in the short term, that if you give 3% saline, 7.5% saline, you get a marked increase in cardiac output as a result of these patients probably being fluid depleted and you giving a hypertonic solution. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean there's any direct inotropic effects, because Steve and I have debated that as well, but if you give 3% sodium chloride, you're going to see the patient's cardiac output getting better, and you're probably going to see their blood pressure get better, and that's a short-lived effect, but you will see it. You could try it yourself. Now, in the show notes, I have a ton of articles looking at this very topic. So if you want to see the evidentiary basis for why I think in a patient who cannot increase their minute ventilation, sodium bicarb's a really bad idea, check out the show notes. If you want to see articles saying that in patients with SIG acidosis, that giving amps of bicarb is not necessarily a clever move, check the show note. Part two of this, which is going to be, you know, 2 weeks from now in the next podcast, we'll discuss all of the situations I think that sodium bicarb is a fantastic idea, and there are a bunch of them. It's just, in my mind, not this situation, but there are situations where you should be administering bicarb, and we will discuss that, and we will discuss the way you should administer bicarb in each of those circumstances. You'll hear more from Dr. Kellum. I want to have a gentleman named Ed Omron on as well, because he has a phenomenal take on this stuff and wrote one of the best articles on the use of sodium bicarbonate as an IV solution. So that's coming up. And I would love to hear your thoughts on this stuff. Now, I will recommend, I'm not going to demand or, you know, ask any more strongly than recommend that if you have comments about a podcast, you put them at mcrit.org underneath the podcast, because that's where most people are going to look for them. If you have a question clinically or a comment that's not related to a podcast, then put that on the Google Plus community page, and I will link that in the show notes as well, because that's a perfect forum for that. And I will tell you, in the future now, my MRAP segments are going to be taking questions I find on the Google Plus and actually discussing them on MRAP. And those MRAP episodes, after about a year, will come back to the MCRIT CME site. So they will come back to you if you are a CME member as well. All right, a few bits of miscellany. First, if you were a CME subscriber and your subscription has lapsed, please consider coming back and resubscribing. If you'd like a little discount, send shoot me an email on the contact page at mcrit.org and I can make that happen. I want you back. You guys are the lifeblood of the show. Without you, I can't do the show. Without the support of the MCRIT CME subscribers, the show would no longer be happening, because the cost of the servers and all that stuff, it's not possible to continue without those folks. So you folks are the lifeblood, and you get CME, and you can write it off, and you could get a reimbursement from your department. So consider coming on back. And then the last thing I will mention is there is a conference in June. It is a neurocritical care conference that is done each year by the folks at Columbia and my friend Stefan Mayer. And he's given me a piece of that conference this year. And the piece I've chosen to do is the state of art resuscitation of the cardiac arrest patient. And I've brought down to New York, or I should say I will bring down to New York, Keith Lurie, who you've heard on the podcast. He's the cutting edge guy for cardiac arrest resuscitation, doing all that incredible stuff with nitroprusside and compressions and medications to blunt the cerebral effects. He's going to be there. We're going to have my friends Zach Shiner and Joe Bellezzo, the folks who are doing ED-initiated ECMO, they're coming down to talk about that stuff and LVAD resuscitation. They're all going to be there on one day. Now, you could sign up for the whole conference, and I strongly suggest you do, but if you just wanted to come for that one day, that piece that I'm setting up with Stefan and all these great folks, then you could do that too, and you could pay just for that one day. So that'll be in the show notes as well. Consider coming on down. And I should say, I don't get a piece of the conference proceeds here. I'm just telling you, it's going to be a great day of lectures. I don't get a piece of this if you sign up. All right, I think I'm going to stop there. There'll be some wheeze this week, and then 2 weeks from now, we'll discuss more about bicarbonate, when you should be using it, and we'll be doing more acid-base over the next couple months. We'll be discussing vasopressors and when you should choose each individual vasopressor for the individual circumstance. So that's coming, and all sorts of other great non-airway stuff. Screw you, Nixon, making me do this, but there you go. And I think I could say goodbye. So Scott Weingart for the MCRIT podcast saying, I will talk to you soon.